Oh, also, same reviewer has shit on Dragon's Dogma, but obviously they're different than Yahtzee, so we'll see how that goes for Yahtzee.
Yes. Cool. I'm also playing Persona 5. That game's really long. Has anyone ever talked about...
Are you playing, like... Okay, so we're just going to start now, because if we're going to start talking about Persona, it's probably not going to stop for a while. This is the Big Bang Theory Theory. Hi, I'm Nick.
And I'm Kyle.
And theoretically, we talk about the show called The Big Bang Theory, which is why our show is called The Big Bang Theory Theory. But it's fine. I'm going to tell you right now, this episode just kind of glanced right off my brain. It was fine. No real highs or lows. Kyle, are you playing Vanilla Persona 5?
No, I'm playing Royal.
Yeah. Ooh. So I will probably never play Royal because I own it. And I've started playing it. But I have, like... I don't know, video game length PTSD from that game. Like, I start playing it, and I'm like, I want to see the new additions or everything, but I know that this is going to be at least 120 hours. Like, that the base game was at least 100 on its own, that whatever added content, and I just, that's one where whatever that, you know, intangible calculus is about experience versus life expectancy, I cannot commit myself to playing it again. But how are you liking it?
I mean, I like it fine. I knew I'd like it. It was just like, yeah, I think the main reason I'm justifying it right now is because I come home at the end of the day and I'm exhausted, and there's no like how do I put this, like, most games you have to play them for a certain amount of time to feel like you've had a satisfying gaming session. For as long as it is, it does have the one benefit that you can turn it on, play it for approximately 10 minutes and turn it off again and be like, well, yeah, you know, checked in on my homies, advanced the story a little bit, you know, checked out what was in this corner of this dungeon or whatever, fused some new, you know, there's, because there's so much stuff to do, but it all ties pretty well into the main plot. You never feel like you're, you know, just completely and totally wasting your time with any particular thing that you're doing. That being said, the idea that all of the reviews that I've read, which seem to be written by insane people, are suggesting like, oh, don't worry too much about playing it through the first time, because all you're really doing is trying to, you know, grind your stats and, you know, get a feel for the game, and then New Game Plus is where the action really happens. I'm like,
freaks.
You think
maniacs
that I'm going to play this whole game and then immediately start over?
That's something where, like, I am one of those people who wants to take advantage of those New Game Plus features, but even just hearing you talk about it right now is giving me such a fucking headache. It's just like, yeah, it's already such a tremendously long game, and, you know, having beaten it once, I do know that at the end of the game, you know, you continue to get super powerful, freaky demons, and that there's nothing that would stop you from grinding and maxing those things out, save for other experiences and doors in your life just being shut away from you. Like, I could play again, and I could, you know, get my level 98 Satan, all of the abilities I want through a combination of fusions so that I can, you know, defeat any enemy in the game in half a breath. Or I can just, like, eat a goddamn sandwich, or go for a walk, or, like, do any of these other things. But, I don't know, like, there's gotta be... They're like, two joint but independent commissions, government-funded, that are gonna put hard caps on the lengths of movies and video games. And it will be brutally enforced. Also, heads up for my recommendation letter. I learned that... The Jodorowsky of Jodorowsky's Dune wanted his version of that film to be 12 to 20 hours long, and that was where I could no longer go along with his insanity. Be
yeah,
fun though,
was,
right?
That was definitely a phase of filmmaking that, well, I was going to say we're no longer in. I guess we're obviously, there are still people who think this way, but just this idea that, like, I mean, and I'll hand it to him. Like, some of those movies are bangers, Lawrence of Arabia, or even, like, the real, like, you know, Stalker is a great movie, and a big part of that is just its atmospheric pacing. But yeah, this whole idea that, like, we don't owe it to our audience to, like, respect their limits or attention spans. They owe it to us. It's like, it's just a very different time. Just, like, can you imagine saying, like, no, if the audience doesn't have it in them to hang with me for 4.5 hours, that's on them. That just means they're letting themselves down.
Well, I think, and, you know, I already blame so much on comic book movies, but, you know, they just continued to test the limits of not only how much movie someone will sit through, but, you know, the total length of credits and everything included that they'll sit through to get that last little satisfying taste of teaser or whatever. And that was annoying enough for the Marvel movies, but then I think the other big directors are like, well, look, like, if some friggin', I don't know, Mountain Dew-fueled ADHD maniac can sit for 3.5 hours to figure out what Ant-Man is going to go inside of next year, like, maybe we could do that similarly about the termination of a tribe, and people will still sit through it. And they don't have to put the shit at the end, you know? That's these old Hollywood directors making their big, long movies. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of the whole system, Kyle.
Yeah.
Doom Part 2 didn't feel too long.
No, it was pretty good. Particularly for video games, it doesn't make sense why they would ever... Because it seems like, if anything, if you had 40 hours of content... Or, I'm sorry, 40 hours seems fine. But if you had, like, 200 hours of content, that's great. That means you can release 2 games.
Yeah, I've heard some argument that part of the reason, in at least a defense for, like, super long game times, is like, you know, these things cost $60 or $70. Like, they should get my maximum time economy out of the game.
Great, make them sell me $230 games.
That'd be swell. Well, that's like, I think Undertale is always free until it started coming out on consoles. That game, like, part of the reason I loved it so much is it's like 6 hours. I wasn't mad that it was such a short game. I was like relieved and refreshed that it let me go in like a reasonable amount of time.
Yes, I think this is, you're right. I hear it now. We're the old men yelling at the clouds. Like, you don't understand. Back in my day.
Well, Carl, these kids these days, what do they want? A 3.5 hour film or a 30 second TikTok?
I do remember, I mean, yeah, I think it's just a function of being an adult and not, like, having as much time on your hands. Oh, that's my fax machine. That's going to fuck up the sound. So take a quick break while I get faxed.
No, we're not taking a break. This is incredible. We're talking about being old men and you're receiving a fax.
Yes. Is that it? Is that the whole goddamn thing? I've been waiting for, like, a month for this fax. They could have sent it by carrier pigeon.
Yeah, fax machines are the most bizarre technology. I don't know why people still insist on using them now that we have the entire internet. I feel like some people keep insisting they're more secure. I don't understand how that's the case.
So I'm just emailing my client to let them know I got the fax.
Sending an email back to 1994.
Yeah, no, it's just... we have less free time, but also... And our attention spans are just wired differently, I guess. I mean... But I do think it is the, like, because games, like, I remember thinking that, like, when I was a little kid, like, A Link to the Past or Final Fantasy, any of the Final Fantasies, I remember thinking those were long games.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think, like, I'm pretty sure you can play through even, you know, I mean, there's always optional stuff that you can do if you want to extend your game playing time by, like, an additional 30 hours if you want to, you know, breed your golden chocobos or whatever. But if you just want to have, like, a fully satisfying experience in Final Fantasy VII and just kind of experiment briefly with the minigames, I think that's, like, a 35-hour game.
I played it a few years ago at a very casual pace, and yeah, we did not surpass 40 hours.
Yeah, wild. It's like, and I just remember thinking that game was, like, epic and... Well, not really that one. I didn't really give a shit. But, like, Final Fantasy IX is the same way. And I remember thinking, this game is epic in scope. The story goes on forever. If anything, it could be a little shorter. And it's the same thing. It's like, what do you want?
I'm, again, trying on my, like, sixth playthrough now to see if I can actually just get through and finish Dark Souls. In spite of how much time I've spent playing it, showing I'm obviously dedicated to this thing, I do wish it and the other Souls games were about half as long. Especially because those are kind of meant to be replayable, so you can, like, max out builds and try different experiments and stuff. And I think the main game in those is usually at least 40 hours, and I'm like, I don't want to just do that again now. Guys, come on.
I hate to say this to you, but are you sure you're just not good enough?
No, that's a big part of it. That's huge. Because
I'm not even saying like speedrunner level, but again, it's actually the guy I was talking, my favorite film or video game reviewer. He's so into Dark Souls that he will just like put on a podcast and play it in the background.
Oh, that's what I do.
Yeah, exactly. And he makes it seem like he can make it through the whole game, and maybe not a few hours, but like, you know. I guess if you just never die, then it goes faster.
Oh, it gets faster and faster. I can chug right through Bloodborne now, but if I could chug through it in half the time, oh, I would enjoy it so much more. You know, that's like, again, to be an old man and talk about older games, you know, like if you got a big action game, get through that in 10 hours, that is not such a brutal length of time that you wouldn't want to start over again with, like, a new character or try something different or whatever, because, hey, it's going to... Like, we're going to talk about the show sooner or later. Like, Devil May Cry 5, that game, perfect length. Perfect length for multiple playthroughs. Yeah. Meant Bayonetta's. For multiple playthroughs. Dante can dance. Yeah. All right. You want to talk about the show?
This is my last... I think the thing that annoys me in Persona 5 is they give you this... sent, like, they keep showing you things and they're like, boy, when when this game opens up and you can spend your day doing however you want, here's all the stuff you can do, and then like half of every month is spent like, okay, today we're basically going through this unskippable cutscene and tomorrow will be a different unskippable cutscene, and that annoys me.
I think any game, but RPGs and JRPGs especially, should experiment with just removing all dialogue and seeing what people can infer from facial expressions and their environments. Like, yes. go real Dark Souls with it, where nothing is explained and you're just like wandering around trying to get your grips on anything that might be happening.
I did. That was going to be my pitch for Final Fantasy. Like, if they wanted to reboot the series, to try to make a classic fun, like, just go back of like the original 1, 2, 3 games, where there's basically no conversations, and just start over from there and try to do that with like all of their modern graphics and aesthetics and stuff and see how it feels.
The dream.
But if I had a particular, this is the last thing I'll say about this, but
you said the last thing was the last thing, Kyle, we're killing ourselves. What are you gonna say?
If I had a one law of video games that would allow, like, if one thing that if you did it, I'd be allowed to execute you on the spot, it's this. If someone says, if you're going to have dialogue in a video game, meaning if you're going to ask me to give my character, like, have my character interact with your character, and 90% of my dialogue choices are things like, what? Huh? Thing you just said? ? I think you should be murdered. I don't think that counts as dialogue. Why is that a thing? Because that happens a lot in Persona 5, It's like, welcome to the palace. The palace? Yes, the palace. The place where dreams come true, where you will learn to fuse your personas. Personas?
Oh,
yes,
God.
The thing that...
Well, and you're reminding me of something that even like the first time I played through it, I was pretty angry about in Xenoblade Chronicles 3, which is like there's a chapter of that game. And, oh, this happens in Final Fantasy VII also. But, there's a moment where you're basically just in a cutscene selector where your character is going through some weird shit and trying to figure out what's going on inside of their own mind. And it's like, well, which, a haunting image of the past and dialogue would you like to experience next? And it's like, I don't need this much insight. Can I just hit some shit? Maybe the next thing I hit as it's dying can give me some exposition about my childhood, but I don't need this. I don't want this.
Okay. Now we've yelled at clouds enough. Now we should probably... By the way, this is still a podcast about the Big Bang Theory, sort of, maybe.
Yes, let's get into it. It's fucking... The episode title's The Expedition Approximation. It's the sixth goddamned episode of the eighth friggin' season of the GD American sitcom The Big Bang Theory. And the short unofficial official wiki fan summary reads, Raj and Sheldon test themselves to see if they can handle an underground scientific expedition, and Leonard and Penny worry about money and their marriage. You know, I think that's an actually good, succinct summary, because that's really all that happens is Raj and Sheldon, they are interested in doing some sort of experiment in the deep salt mines of somewhere, I can't remember, specifically for dark matter research. That, you know, that's where it's happening, and they're excited to do it. And then Amy very wisely steps in to be like, wait a second, aren't you guys afraid of everything? Like, Sheldon, didn't you have a panic attack when we last went through a car wash? And he's like, oh, that's just because I couldn't believe how clean your car was, Penny. But they remain interested, and so they try to simulate what the mines would be like by hanging out in the steam tunnels underneath the university. And this is I think it's remarkably unfunny. I can't believe what a wasted opportunity it was. There's a moment where, because they're just like sitting in what is basically a dark underground hallway, and they're not even trying to do anything while they're under there. They're just like, well, it's dark and it's scary and it's over 100 degrees, which is what the mines would be like. So let's just see if we can even, you know, just hang out in this environment without completely losing our minds. And Sheldon, you know, the one laugh I got, I think, was Raj asked something like, oh, you know, any old, like, minor ballads or something? And Sheldon says, only the hits. I like that. And then he sings an old minor song. There's no jokes. Raj comments on how it's pretty dark. And they just kind of hang out. Later on, Amy's like, oh, you guys want snacks? It's like, oh, we can't get snacks. That's not realistic. Oh, unless we brought snacks with us. Let's have her get us snacks. And at some point, not long after the snack run, Sheldon sees behind Raj two rats crawling across the wall. And he just silently stands up, flees, and closes the hatch to the steam tunnels, abandoning Raj to deal with the rats, who screams and screams in the dark. Apparently, Amy doesn't do anything to help because, you know, one of the stinger scenes is Raj coming back to the apartment bedraggled, completely in disbelief that Sheldon would leave him in the tunnels, only for Sheldon, oh, so dryly, to be like, yeah, stating the obvious again, aren't we? And then that's basically our B plot. Even though it is, well, it's technically the A plot, but whatever, the other friggin' plot, there was, I don't know, a few episodes back or whatever, Leonard bought Penny a car. I guess it costs about $12,000, but now that she's got a company car through her pharmaceutical job, she's like, she sold it because she doesn't need to have two cars. And then Leonard is a little offended that his gift was sold away. Penny insists that, well, you say you're offended, but really you're insecure that I have money now and you don't have as much financial influence over me. And even though that doesn't actually seem to be at all the case, Leonard, you know, has to continue pushing back about that. They ultimately decide, you know, let's put it into a joint account, and this will be our first married money. Hey, that seems like a good solution. You want to know what? That's actually the end of that plot. But God, there's like 5 or 10 more minutes to fill. So let's send them over to Wallowitz and Bernadette's apartment, and they can just sit on the couch as they watch those two fight over money. And I think that's like kind of the only funny stuff in the episode. But also frustrating is to see, like, you know, I guess it's kind of funny that Wallowitz is so insecure about Bernadette making more money than him, and that's kind of the whole basis of their fight that they have in front of Leonard and Penny. But at the same time, I do kind of, like, grit my teeth a little bit, because I'm like, really? I still don't know what you bring to the table, Wallowitz. Like, you don't need to be the breadwinner. I don't think that's any sort of expectation and requirement in the relationship you guys have, but you also don't do anything at home, and you're a weird pervert, and you're just kind of annoying overall. Like, what do you secretly have, like, a monster hog? What are your tricks? What value do you bring? And I hate him so much less than I used to. We talked about how Wallowitz's edges have been softened, but then, you know, even jokingly, the episode calls into question his qualifications as a partner. And I'm like, well, should I have an episode where we explain, yeah, what exactly it is that she finds appealing in him? We just kind of take for granted, or at least I have this whole time, that they just kind of liked each other for no particular reason. Now they're paired up and that's it. But yeah, so even the funny part of the episode, as it's like, Wallowitz, come on, you're not carrying your weight here. That's basically the whole episode. I don't know. Finer points you want to bring in, Kyle?
No. I mean, I was with you. It's like, Wallowitz is annoying. Yeah, the thing where they're underground. We all knew that wasn't going to work right away.
I'm shocked they didn't do anything with it other than just sit in the hallway until the rats showed up. Like, that's... like, if you're going to have an extra little set, why not do something, anything with it, other than have them, I mean, literally just sit there and Sheldon sings a not funny song? I just don't get it.
Yeah, I guess I did sort of assume that that was, like, at the very least, they were going to get into some kind of interesting fight or something like that, and that didn't happen.
No.
So it's like, yeah, what was the point of this?
I also think that even though Penny and Leonard do essentially resolve their money issues halfway through their own plot, that what really needed to happen is that Penny needed to totally rail Leonard with a strap on, just to physically, you know, show him that, hey, I have this power now. You saw my suit. You see my short hair. Well, guess what? This is the next thing coming. Me inside of you. Only figuratively. Because it's a strap-on. But maybe technology at the time allows for that, too. If you really want to feel like you're getting blasted inside of Leonard, I, Penny, who have experienced it many a times, do recommend it. But if we don't have that, I'm just going to have to, like, pull your hair and slap you around a little, too. And then Leonard to be like, yeah, okay, I guess, you know, do what you want with the money. But you know what? None of that happened. So I don't know what the hell this show is even about anymore. Any other thoughts on this?
No.
God damn it. Yeah, like, this is one of those ones where, like, I want to kind of force to talk about it because I feel like we have so little so far. But it was also one where as soon as it was over, I was like, nope, not going to talk about this one. Going to find anything else to talk about. Because, yeah, there's nothing, like, bad or, like, offensive about it. It's just, I don't know, almost filler, I guess.
Yes. I think because, I mean, that I thought that money conversation was going to, but you're right, they resolved it basically completely rationally, so.
Yeah, well, like, an ideal solution, I thought, where it's like, what if this was, you know, not only our joint couples account, you know, like, the first investment towards, you know, our wedding or whatever. It's like, God damn, that is ideal. But then, yeah, it still needs to keep going, so. Well, you know, let's get into the things that we actually enjoy then. How about that? Kyle, I do have one loaded up and could go first. All right. So, we talked a little bit about Dune. Here's the thing I have to say about the new Dune movies. I don't love them. I don't.
Gasp.
I know. I don't hate them. That's the other thing. I think the worst thing about them is that they really leave no impression on me. I can't say they're bad at all, but I watch them and I'm just like, that was a series of events that took place in a specific order, wasn't it? And I think one thing I've realized is that, you know, whether or not intentionally or like what the actual plan is here, I feel like they really strip out all the weirdness that I want. Like, I really, in either of these movies, was waiting for, like, Paul to go on a big spirit journey and have some sort of intense, like, magical hallucinatory experience. Acid trip would be ideal, you know? And they fuck around a little with the water of life or whatever. That's fine. But it's just so much of it is about, like, the literal war and human drama, which is good, but it's just I wanted it to be weirder. And I noticed, I was like, I want to watch a documentary. I don't want to waste my mind on some bullshit that never actually happened. And so I watched a documentary about a movie that never actually happened. Jodorowsky's Dune, which, this came out back in 2013. I've only heard good things about it since then. Somehow, I've just never gotten around to it. It happens to be on Max. I watched it. I loved it. I thought it was wonderful. I loved it so much more than either of the two parts of the new Dune. And again, like, I do not think the new Dune is bad. But, like, just for example, so this director that never actually got to make his movie, his name is Alejandro Jodorowsky. He is a Chilean director, I believe. And when he's talking about in the documentary, like trying to find the right cast and crew for his film, at one point he is like, you know, Hollywood, they let me work with best visual arts director. The 2001. I work with him. I say no. He is technically proficient. He is not a spiritual warrior. And I need spiritual warriors. I'm like, fuck. This, ooh, I like you. I like your bizarre ideas. And I think the coolest thing about the movie, and the most tragic thing, is that, not just that, like, this guy, oh, and also, I really didn't know anything about him aside from what the documentary presents. He was a pioneering freaky deaky director, creating super bizarre art films that were both controversial and confusing. And I guess he was successful enough that, you know, they're like, hey, you can do Dune if you want. And he got on hand graphic artist Mobius. When I say that, I don't mean like a designer. I mean like a comic book guy. And they storyboarded the entire film in comic book drawings. And so, like, a big feature of the movie is this gigantic, basically, like, hardbound graphic novel of everything that would have been in the movie had they actually made it, like, ready to go. And he has all these insane casting decisions. Like, he wants Salvador Dali to play the Emperor, and I think, oh, Mick Jagger was maybe going to be Fade. You know, all these kinds of ridiculous things. It's all coming together. Like, it's actually, he's getting on board who he wants. He's got the music, he's got the art, he's got the effects all sorted out. All he needs is the money. And that's where Hollywood is like, get this fucking freak out of the room. Like, what are we, who is this guy? This mad Chilean comes in here talking about spiritual warriors. And again, whether this gets cut from the beginning of the episode, I don't know. I am 100% on board with his vision until at some point he's like, yes, it would have been somewhere between 14 and 20 hours. And it's like, you idiot. Like, that's that's where your beautiful, brilliant art mind can fuck clean off. Of course no one is going to make that movie. Like, you just, if you really thought that was going to happen, you were just jerking everyone around for years. But that aside, oh, I loved it. And something I liked that he mentioned and got me thinking more about it, and I'm actually going to have to try reading Dune again because of this movie, is he really did want to emphasize the more spiritual stuff that I feel is, like, lacking in the new movies. And, you know, what that his goal, as he states in the movie, is, you know, kind of ridiculous. He wanted to make a movie that was actually going to, like, affect the collective consciousness of mankind, like the way they relate to Paul and his struggle on Arrakis would forever open up viewers' minds themselves and have them rethink about the world and conflict and life and whatever. I don't know. I just depicting some weird acid trips would be cool too. But yeah, it's great. The Jodorowsky himself, it's just such, like, a bizarre and interesting guy. It sounds like he kind of tortured one of his sons to make this movie and has some regrets, but he's also like, I was on a spiritual journey. Like, come on. So I 1000% recommend this movie. I don't know how big of a tragedy it is that his film ultimately didn't get made. But the documentary itself is absolutely wonderful. And so I recommend Chodorowski's Dune.
Well, if you want, so that, I think that's a good recommendation. I was just going to say, so I've never seen a single Jodorowsky movie, but he made a couple that are, you know, obvious, that are really, really critically acclaimed. And sometimes they screen around here, but not until like 12 o'clock at night. So I don't know. Maybe if you ever come back to LA, we can time it for a screening of a Jodorowsky movie. But
that would rule.
El Topo, I've always wanted to see because that was his big breakout. And it is described as an acid Western.
That they discuss it a fair deal in this movie. Yeah, and I really want to see it now too.
Yeah, because it was just like, I mean, apparently the experience of watching it is you're like, oh yeah, this is definitely, I mean, this is a Western, but nothing that's happening in it seems to be like, seems like, I'm pretty sure this is all a metaphor, but a metaphor for what? Am I reliving the Old Testament right now?
Well, and that's, like, when they talk about it in the documentary, you know, they talk about, like, people watching it and being like, I don't know what that is, but it was something, right? And then I think his next big hit, at least, you know, the way you describe it after El Topo was, what is it, The Holy Mountain?
Yes, and The Holy Mountain, which I've looked up, it, like, does not appear to have a plot. It's just, when I look it up, it's just, like, it's a bunch of really crazy cool images, but it literally just appears to be a bunch of, like,
yeah,
crazy, zany images and no plot.
Well, one of the artists working on, you know, the failed Dune project was like, I'd never heard of Jodorowsky, and so I looked up some of his work, and I watched The Holy Mountain, and I have no idea what's going on. You know, at one point, a man shits out a golden turd, and everyone worships it, and I said, all right, I'll make a movie with this guy. that as much as he could process, so... yes, Kyle, we need to do that whenever I am next back in LA.
All right. I will put that on our list. So my recommendation is not as good.
Then we're done. All right.
No, but it's also very, but, it's just such a nerd recommendation, but I really feel compelled to talk about it. It's not just that because it's about what it's about. I've been watching the first three episodes have dropped of X-Men 97. I don't know what kind of demographics listen to this show. I try not to think about it.
Between our ages, I'm sure people have to have some familiarity with the old X-Men cartoon.
Right. So for context, the X-Men, well, everybody knows who the fucking X-Men are. That's kind of the whole point, and that's kind of where I'm going with this. So everybody knows who the X-Men are. There was they had made multiple attempts to make an X-Men cartoon show throughout the 80s. And kept failing, and they finally hit it in the early 90s. First episode, I think, came out in 93, 94. That was I'm sure a lot of other people too, but my introduction to the X-Men was not, and this is true of, I think, most of my superhero whatevers, is that my introductions to them were not through the comic books, but through the...
Fox Kids?
The TV shows, the Batman animated series, the Spider-Man animated series, and definitely X-Men the animated series, which I think is most famous, its most enduring legacy is it had one of the most kick-ass opening, like, guitar stings of any TV show to ever be for children. But, yeah, was an attempt to really capture the vibe of the X-Men comic books and the aesthetics of the X-Men comic books at the time that the show was coming out, which is kind of interesting because... when it was, it's all of the character models and things were based on like the Jim Lee 90s reboot versions, which were pretty new at the time, but came to be pretty, and in the comics, they've since moved on from those outfits, but they were pretty iconic and they continue to be iconic in a lot of media. For instance, if you've ever played any of the Marvel versus Capcom games, you know, Cyclops's outfit, that's the Jim Lee outfit with the crazy, pouches and the,
well, I
and
think
the
it's,
sash and shit. Like,
I think all of those from the original X-Men arcade game and like even Marvel vs. Capcom were running off of those templates.
Well, no, I want to, the X-Men side scroller, that was from the 80s, and so that's
not the side scroller, I meant the fighting game.
Yeah, all of the fighting games, which came out, it makes sense, they came out in the 90s, and all of their costumes, so from Street Fighter versus X-Men onward, are based on that whole look and vibe. But anyway, so it was a TV show in the 90s, and people, you know, like me, grew up on it, and you know, that's how I first got into, you know, people like Wolverine and Cyclops and shit, and then I went on to almost inevitably go tripping hard into the actual comic books, and so that's my life now. And they made, you know, after that show I think aired for 4 or 5 seasons, and then they dropped it on kind of a interesting cliffhanger. Not like that big a cliffhanger, but just in like a slight tonal shift of like, if the show were to go forward, it would have to like take a different tack. And then they, you know, that was supposed to be the finale of the show. And then they made a couple other X-Men cartoons after that, which each had their own sort of vibe. And so for a long time, the only thing that really anybody had to say about the original X-Men animated show was, you know, very nerdy online discourses about whether or not it was really the best X-Men cartoon show, and then like memes, you know, a couple years back, all of a sudden the memes that were based on that show just became super popular for some reason. I don't know why. All of this is to say that it's inexplicable to me. I cannot justify it, but they decided at some point that they were going to make new episodes of this show, and they were going to call it X-Men 97, which is basically a retro nod to the idea that this show would be basically season 6 or whatever, coming out in 1997 of this show that hadn't been out in 20 years. And it's like, and I was basically, to put my cards on the table, I was sure it was going to be terrible. I mean, I was excited enough to watch it, but I was just like, it just didn't seem possible to me that it would be really good, because so much, and it's not like, I need to be careful here too, because a lot of people were complaining about the show before it ever came out, because they were like, oh, it seems like they're placing more focus on female characters, and oh, this, I don't know. This is one of those things where I'm not sure whether the backlash was ever actually that, like, were there really mobs and mobs of people who were pre-boycotting the show, or was that itself sort of a manufactured controversy? But my hesitation had nothing to do with any of that. My hesitation had to do with, like, basically any time in the last decade that any major studio has given me what I thought I wanted, which is, like, a continuation of something from my childhood, or, you know, a glossy reboot or remake of something from my childhood, I've ended up hating it. And I think that makes sense. Look, I'm an adult now. I'm not that person anymore. Also, the stuff is, like, in a different...
There's always, like translation errors, I think.
Yes, that's what I'm about to get at. So there's always this sense that, like, this looks like something that I'm supposed to like, but it doesn't really feel like it in a way I can't quite put my finger on it. It feels like it's actually being made for, it feels like the people who made this, despite understanding where the original, that there was this audience for this thing, doesn't actually give a shit about that and is now doing something completely different. So what's weird is X-Men 97 does not feel like that. X-Men 97 manages to both feel like a perfectly logical successor to the television show, of which it is ostensibly a sequel series, and also, at the same time, feels exactly like the experience of reading the X-Men comic books in a way that no other adaptation has managed to capture or even try. And, I mean, I guess that makes sense, right? That's what you would, like, in a weird way, it's like, why would you expect it to be different? And the answer is because that's just how it's always been. It's such a straightforward formula, right? Like, what if we just took the first three episodes of the show have revolved almost entirely around, like, specific plots that I can point to from the 80s and 90s comic books on which the show is based. So all it's really doing is saying, hey, remember these incredibly popular comics that resonated with huge audiences of nerds? What if we just animated a bunch of that shit with our best animation techniques and just sort of made TV out of it? And it's like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Why wouldn't people engage with that? But they've, it's literally, it's just like, it's mind-boggling me to because no one has ever tried it before, and if, or at least not in a long time. I think the thing that makes this cartoon show better than any of the live-action X-Men, that's unfair. It's brand, like, there have been three episodes. It could easily go to hell. But what makes it, if not better, then different, is just that vibe of watching it feels a lot like reading the comic books in a way that basically watching nothing else has felt like engaging with the source material. None of the, like, the Marvel movies have not felt anything like the Marvel comic books for quite some time now, and that's fine. It's not a, that's not like, it's not a valid complaint on my part, but I guess that's what I'm saying. Is like, I've gotten so used, this is basically what I really wanted to talk about. I've just gotten so used to like, oh yeah, it's a Batman movie, but don't expect the Batman movie to feel anything like the experience of reading a Batman comic, because this is really made for a different audience or a wider audience or whatever. You know, don't expect the Marvel Cinematic Universe to be anything like the Marvel Comics universe, because they'll mine it for some ideas that they think are cool, but they don't even encourage the people who make those to like read those comics, because they don't want them to get their minds to get confused by all the nerd garbage. And I feel a little bit of contempt for the source material out of almost every adaptation, and I kind of get it. But it's so infected now that the idea that even a cartoon, and even a cartoon which was based on one of the most faithful translations of a comic to ever come out, the idea that it would continue to be a faithful translation of that comic was just really weird to me, and I was not expecting it. But yeah, if you've ever liked the X-Men as a comic book concept, if you like cool animation, it's great. It's the stories are great. It's incredibly well animated. It's got that Gonzo vibe where it's like, yes, this is largely about, you know, mutants as an allegory for racism, but also there are aliens and demons and interdimensional, like, goblins and things, because that's just like
the specter of the Cold War.
Yeah, that's just the comics that we're in. That's like, that's just how comic books work. So in like the first three episodes, we've had clones and time travel and demons and mystic extra dimensional entities that may be like chaos gods. And it's just like, we're three episodes in and I am really vibing with it. And also, a lot of people have commentated on this, but Cyclops, who has always been a bitch in every movie adaption, is a pretty cool character in the comics, and we've never gotten a chance to see that, and this is pretty awesome.
Nice. Also, I haven't stopped thinking about it since you mentioned it like 10 minutes ago, that the different art iterations in the video games, the one from the fighting games with Cyclops is the only way I can imagine him, and in like the old Nintendo game and the side-scrolling beat-em-up arcade game is when he had the, I don't know what you call it on, whatever headgear was.
Yeah, he normally has like a skull cap. Like in most versions of the character, you can't. He doesn't have the hair. What if his hair was just like rocking out the whole time? Was actually a new idea.
Well, but even as a kid, I was like, "God, that looks dorky." Like all of this is so cool. All these guys are so cool, and then Cyclops is over here with his bare dome. Ugh. But anyway. That's all I have to say, is I never liked that costume, even as a wee baby. He's got such good hair, Kyle. He's got beautiful hair.
He does. All the X-Men have beautiful hair. That was another... So if you want to know, like, I was watching the show with my girlfriend, and at one point, two of the characters are talking, and one of them is, like, you know, freaking out in Portuguese, and she's like, is one of the characters on the show speaking Portuguese? And I was like, how do I explain to you that one of the things that's cool about the X-Men is they are one of the most diverse and international cast of superheroes in the comics medium without it taking 45 minutes. I know that's a thing that humans can do, but
you just explained it to me in about 4 seconds.
Yeah, but that's because I had to practice. I've had practice. I literally had to pause it. I had to pause the TV show, take a deep breath, and collect my thoughts for like a solid minute to be able to get it down to the version that I gave her, which was about 3 minutes, which I've now managed to streamline down in my head to the version I gave you, which was about 20 seconds.
Trying to imagine the chill going down Gwen's spine as you pause the show and turn to her and just start breathing. She's like, hey, what's on with this show? And then you're just like... planning your lesson, just...
That's exactly what it's like. She's used to it by now. She knows who she's, you know, gonna marry.
Yeah, I guess that's true. That's like... if she wasn't into that at this point, that'd be... yeah, this is a fundamental concern, but she knows you're her comic boy. And also the old X-Men shit rules. That's... You already said it. Same as me, though. It was my introduction to all that stuff. Like, the video games and that TV show were all I knew of Marvel until I started working in a comic book shop. So,
yeah. You might appreciate in episode three, they're pulled inside a video game, and there are many, many shout outs to the not so many shout outs to the fighting games, but there are a lot of shout outs to the side scroller.
Do they have to fight Arcade? Is he every game-themed villain? Is it Arcade?
Yeah, I thought it would be Arcade too, actually, but it was actually Mojo.
Oh, well, that's nice. I'm actually glad it's not Arcade. I was like, don't let it be him. Cool. Well, Kyle, we talked about some nerdy things, which is good, because the episode that we actually watched for our research was very so-so. What will we do now with our lives?
I'm going back to work.
Yeah, I'm probably going to do some of that too. I might play some Dark Souls, but you know, now that I'm a Texas landman, you know, the oil don't sleep for nobody, baby.
Oh my God. Are you gonna? Can you? If you start talking like Daniel Day-Lewis, I swear to God.
What, you'll fuck me because my voice is so cool and sexy?
I'm an oil man.
Yeah. Slippery, and I like going down, if you know what I mean. Wagga wagga wagga. I gotta watch that movie again.
Yeah, I don't think he says slippery and I like going down wagga wagga.
Are you sure? I know we joke about how, like, sometimes my memory ain't so great, but that one feels very real to me.